Bloomberg Surveillance with Michael McKee and Tom Keane. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Carl Weinberg of High Frequency Economics, he writes a much-in-demand research note on global economics and is focused quietly, Peter, for years on Japan. The rest of the world is catching up with his caution over Japan. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Peter.
Let's go through the dynamics, first of all. This, folks, this is almost Econ 101. You've got animal spirits, which is top-line GDP, and then you take away inflation, and that equals real GDP. So if they do 3% nominal GDP, and you take away 2% inflation, you have 1% real GDP. All that math gets messed up with deflation, which is a deflation Japan has had for years. Now they have flipped back to inflation from deflation. Is it safe to say the Japanese people have never seen a cut their pay they're seeing right now?
Well, first of all, Tom, let's get some facts in here. There is no inflation in Japan. There never has been. If you look at the CPI, most of the prices are falling. What they've been experiencing in Japan for the last year has been a rise in the price of imported goods, some food, some energy price increases related to shutting down the nuclear plants. But most of the prices in Japan are still falling.
They're still in deflation.
Still in deflation. They just have the illusion of being out of deflation because of this out of deflation because of this relative price change. In terms of wages, real wages in Japan have been falling for decades, and nobody's paid any attention to it. It's been disguised by the deflation that you just described. When prices are falling and money wages are falling, nobody really feels the pain as much as when wages are rising and they're not keeping up with prices. But underneath it, the real wages of Japanese workers have been falling for 20 years, and they continue to fall through the current episode even at a faster pace.
I mean, I look at this, Peter Coy, and the challenges here of Abenomics and its ability to redound on the United States. It's remarkable where we stand now, isn't it?
It is scary. I'm interested in knowing from Carl, what exactly about Abenomics is not working? What should the Japanese government be doing differently if indeed it wants to gender some little bit of inflation?
Well, you know, there's nothing about Abenomics that's right for the problems that face Japan. That's the core problem. Japan is doomed by its demographics, by its large debt overhang, and Abenomics addresses none of that. So Abenomics gave a little kick to what I'll call a dead animal. Mm-hmm. Right, which is the economy. The economy is naturally contracting because population is going down. Econ 101, you decrease the number of workers in the economy and economy gets smaller. Japan's getting smaller because the burden of paying down the debt is being spread along an increasingly smaller number of workers. You have a little kick of spending and for a couple of months you get a burst of growth. But now that fiscal stimulus has turned to fiscal drag. And GDP, if you look at private GDP in Japan, it's been dead flat for the last two quarters. In other words, the government spending is all that's working.
So the question, though, is what could they be doing differently?
Well, they could put their women to work. And I know, Tom, that you've been very engaged on this issue. Kathy Matsui's put forward, the government's accepted it, but the Japanese business community hasn't. There's a large resource of women who could join the workforce outside of the household and contribute to GDP. They could open their door to immigrants. That would be a really big thing, but culturally it's not going to happen.
Here on Bloomberg Radio Plus, and we're going to send this out, folks, it's a chart on Radio Plus worldwide on iTunes and Android. I mean, I wasn't aware of this, but yields in Japan make a new dash lower. If anything, with Abenomics, we'd finally see some form of measured high yields. We haven't seen that, have we?
No, what happened was about 6 months ago, as your chart shows, inflation expectations morphed back to deflation expectations. People realized that the only thing keeping the CPI up was the year-ago depreciation of the yen, and that works out of the math by March.
Yeah.
So people expecting depreciation, inflation expectations, if you will, turning down to deflation, and at the same time, the Bank of Japan is buying bonds hands over fist. It's a recipe in the short term for the bold and the brave to go into this very twitchy JGB market and look for a rally.
This screams of be careful what you wish for, or almost overcome by events. What is the leadership of Japan most afeard of?
Well, I'll do something that I'm afraid of, which is I'll disagree with you. All right, I don't think anybody in Japan wanted this. I don't think anybody in Japan ever wanted to face...
But here it is.
Here it is. The demographic challenge, the decline of the population, the over-borrowed government and the huge debt burden, now all coming together in a perfect storm that has no good policy solution within traditional policy.
What though, I can see the economy shrinking. Demographics are unavoidable in the short term, at least. What though could they do to get the economy going given those fundamentals? You talked about supply side remedies, bringing in more immigrants, bringing in more women to the workforce. But what about on the demand side? Are you arguing that the supply would create its own demand?
If we brought more people in and we could create more stuff and we could put more people to work, we would have a growing economy, right? But I studied economics a long time ago, but I don't think anything has changed with production functions. And if you have fewer people working, you're going to get less stuff being made by the economy. And if you have a constant debt that doesn't go down while the economy is shrinking, you've got a problem.
Well, to Jim Bullard and Michael McKee's interview, folks, hear that at Bloomberg Radio Plus. Michael McKee with the president of St. Louis Fed. He's worried about not a Japan-like, that's too strong a phrase, but this disinflation that is out there. Do the challenges of Japan come back over to the United States?
Well, I don't think so, Tom. I think that deflation is a problem. It's a particularly natural characteristic of an economy where the labor force is shrinking. Just as in our lifetimes.
Like Italy, like Japan.
Well, the opposite, actually. In our lifetimes, we've seen economies grow and populations grow, and we've seen inflation as its constant companion.
Right.
And deflation is the constant companion of a shrinking population, of a shrinking workforce. And Japan's demographics have been adverse for 15 or 20 years already. So I don't see that happening in the United States because we are open to immigration. We have people who want to come here. I think this should focus like a laser, Washington, on immigration reform and on being able to get young, talented people in here now before the Social Security problem hits, before our own debt burden overwhelms us.
Peter Coy, get one more question.
You think that the inflation rate in the U.S. is likely to start going above the Fed's target or below it in the coming year, let's say?
You know, I was just reading Jim O'Sullivan's report this morning. He's concerned that slack may be a little bit tighter than what the Fed and CBO are looking at, and that may be the basis for a little bit more price increase moving forward because we believe slack is the main driver of inflation pressures in this economy. However, we're at 1% now on the core PCE. We're a full percentage point below where the Fed wants us to be. So for the Fed, they're kind of getting what they did wish for, I think, with a little bit of a tighter labor market, a little bit of a tighter economy, but not inflation in any way, shape, or form.
What is Jim O'Sullivan, your colleague's, run rate now for the U.S. economy? I mean, Macroeconomic Advisors has us under 2% for this quarter. Granted, there's all sorts of weather noise out there. But what is the high-frequency economics run rate right now for the economy?
Well, Jim, in his daily notes on the global economy this morning, just scaled down his estimate for the current quarter to 2.3% from 3.3%. Mm-hmm. But he has it coming right back in the next quarter. He thinks the weather is a temporary distortion, and that we're going to get back to where we were. He has 3.5% penciled in for the last two quarters of this year.
Which is a buoyancy. I mean, that's really not bad.
It's not a bad growth rate at all, especially when you look at Europe, which is barely growing at all. You look at Japan, which is barely growing at all. China, of course, is doing much better. You look at the UK, which is barely growing at all. You know, the U.S. is an attractive proposition to investors who need growth in their investment strategy. We've got it, and the rest of the world doesn't. It should be a positive for the dollar.
Bonds in Italy and Spain are priced in nirvana. Why are their bonds priced high, yields lower, if you still have concerns about a liquidity trap in Europe?
Well, you know, Tom, the challenge in Europe has morphed, you know, from 2-3 years ago when it was all about sovereign risk. And right now, what happened then was sovereign risk impacted on the banking system, and that's caused a capital adequacy problem in banks, and they're pulling credit back. Now, it's spun around the other way. And for 2014, what we're looking at is we're looking at the banks in Europe under stress and their problems putting pressure on the sovereigns. And the trigger here is Well, the trigger, of course, is underlying it. The banking system is undercapitalized by most standards. But the trigger is the ECB's asset quality review, which is going to be accomplished by November.
These are real stress tests.
Well, there's not even a stress test yet. It's just the asset quality, just looking at how many loans on the books are good and what's the probability of getting paid back with no stress. And that's going to affect 128 banks. And some banks are going to fail. They've told us that. They said it's not a test unless somebody fails. That's what Axel Weber said at Davos. So when banks fail, they have to be fixed, and there's no mechanism in place to fix them. So this is kind of like jumping off the boat without some flotation device.
So, Carl, where can the money come from to recapitalize the banks?
Well, it's got to come from taxpayer revenue. It's got to come just like TARP did, right, from raising money from the public, whether it's through selling bonds and deficits or whether it's through, taxpayer revenue. You know, you recall that TARP was a pretty clever scheme in retrospect. It made money ultimately for the government. And almost all of the investments that it put cash into paid the taxpayer back. The same scenario could happen in Europe. This doesn't have to be seen as deficit finance for economic recovery, the stuff that the Germans are constitutionally prohibited from doing.
But what's the prospect that the money for a bank in a smallish country, a weak country, could come from the stronger countries of Europe, cross-border
flows? Zero, right?
Absolutely zero. And that's why it's time for policymakers to start looking at, instead of acting in a mutualized way, instead of acting as a union, to act in unison as independent governments to find the resources as independent countries. They can be collegial, and their national bank supervisors can talk to each other, but countries have to start building
that
reserve.
Frame this critical question for me, and I say this for all my American listeners that are like, okay, we've heard this story for 4 years and everything continues. You know, the planes to Paris are packed. I mean, I guess is how I'd put it. Draghi saved the day. Was that a tangible policy that President Draghi made with the ECB, or was it a Band-Aid, and the Band-Aid's going to be ripped off and lost here at some point?
Well, it's a bluff. You know, the OMT.
Draghi made a bluff.
A bluff. And the bluff convinced the markets that everything is okay. So
yes.
Right now we're in nirvana, as you to use your word, okay? Everybody thinks Europe is fixed because Draghi says he's going to do whatever it takes. But if and when the time comes for him to do whatever it takes, the market is going to realize he doesn't have very much he can do.
Do you have a week of 1 year that you can tell us when this is going to occur? Is this like a 2014 thing, or is it out there?
Keep your eye on November 2014, that's when the ECB's asset quality review is going to be published. And in the months leading up to that, investors are going to start to speculate which banks are going to pass and which banks aren't. And that's going to cause upset in the funding of these banks, upset in the share prices of these banks, and that's going to push over potentially to sovereign problems.
Peter Coy, you actually worked at Davos, unlike me. For me, it was one big play fest. But did you hear these concerns at Davos that Dr. Weinberg brings up?
I think people were living in a dream world, and I still don't understand. Usually markets are forward-looking. If they see there are going to be problems coming in November, they react to them now, and you would start to see the bond yields going up, the prices of going down. It's not happening. What's going on there?
Well, you heard Axel Weber at Davos on the second day, you know, in that presentation, is Europe fixed? And he said, well, he says, complacency is misplaced. And by the way, Axel and I agree on absolutely nothing except for this. This is the first time in years that we've ever agreed on anything. And he says, complacency is misplaced. Banks still have problems and they're yet to be fixed. And fixing them is going to cost the taxpayer money. And if you think that's not going to happen, then you're being delusional. Those are almost his exact words. And I agree with him on that. I think that there are problems lurking in the banking system, and this is the year that the banking system problems come back to bite us.
Don't be a stranger. Carl Weinberg.
Bloomberg Surveillance, weekday mornings at 7 Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014. Bloomberg LP.